Dear Dhamma friends, we are coming to the next part of this mindfulness for young adults session. That is a short Dhamma sermon, and today we are discussing another verse of Rhinoceros Horn Sutta, or sometimes called as the Khagga-Visana Sutta. So as you all can remember, that we were discussing this Khagga-Visana Sutta for several weeks now. And basically, this talks about various aspects of the Dhamma and how certain incidents have become certain triggering points for certain people to attain Paccheka Buddhahood. So we know that there are three stages of full enlightenment, and that is the Sammasambuddha, Paccheka Buddha and the Sravaka Buddha. Sammasambuddha is the person who self-enlightened and capable of preaching the Dhamma and establishing the Sangha order, so that many thousands, millions of others also able to get liberated. And Paccheka Buddha, sometimes called as Private Buddha, where he too self-enlightened but don't establish a Sangha order, and he seems not capable of explaining the Dhamma to deep extent or explain Dhamma in detail, so that his attainment is somewhat private. And then he's a Shravaka Buddha, where he is an Arahant who actually has get some guidance from the Sammasambuddha's teaching, that is the Dhamma, and using which he has practiced himself and then has attained, and then he is capable of preaching to some extent. And they are actually different. So certain monks are capable of explaining, and certain others are not much capable of explaining the Dhamma. Anyway, so this particular sutta available in Sutta Nipata, as we discussed, is one of the suttas which is attributed to Paccheka Buddhas, mentioning that all these verses are uttered by Paccheka Buddha when they have attained Paccheka Buddhahood, and they are explaining their experience. So they are mentioning what is the close reason for them to attain Paccheka Buddhahood. Now, today actually we have come to one verse which is starting like Diswa Suvannassa Pabhassarani Kammara Puttena Sunitthithani Sangatta Manani Duve Ujasmin Eko Chare Khagga Visana Kappo. Now, Eko Chare Khagga Visana Kappo is the term again and again appear in all the verses, almost all the verses, and it emphasizes the seclusion. This whole sutta actually has an emphasis on seclusion, practicing in isolation. Now, this is in a way not that one is having any problem with others or cannot deal with others, but they prefer seclusion, and they consider it as one way of motivation for their practice. So therefore this seclusion, therefore sometimes called as viveka, is sometimes emphasized in the Dhamma. Now in one occasion, one person, actually a king, was dwelling in a garden, and at that time he had a queen and as well as a slave woman. Now, the slave woman is preparing some sandal powder to apply to the king's head. And at that time, king was just lying down. And the queen was also looking at the king, and she's also close by. By the way, when the slave woman is, the attendant woman is preparing this sandal powder, so she actually had one, bracelet around her one arm and two bracelets around her another arm. And when she is preparing this sandalwood or sandal powder using, say, assume the left hand, which has a single bracelet, it didn't make much sound. And when she turned to the other hand and she started to use the right hand, which had two bracelets, when she is using, assume that a mortar or something to prepare the sandal powder, so it made additional sound because those two bracelets were touching each other, bracelets were hitting each other. So it produces kind of a tingling sound, kind of a echoing sound. You know, when there is a kind of metal, two metal pieces are hitting each other, touching each other, it produces little sound. So this particular king had made a kind of a notice of this. So when this woman is using one hand, which has only one bracelet, it is quite silent in a way. Only one sound is available, that is the powdering happens through the whatever the device. But on the other hand, when she changed to the other hand, which had actually two bracelets, when she is using that hand, it made an additional sound because those two bracelets were touching each other, hitting each other. So that has become a sign for this king to reflect. And he is thinking, when I am alone, I can be quiet. When I have another companion or many others, then I'll be disturbed. So it is difficult for me to practice. Now, while he is looking at again and again this some sort of this sign, this notice, and how this woman is preparing with an idea that how the companionship gathering of many people and too much association is kind of a hindrance. Actually, the queen also has noticed that the king is looking at this woman's hands. And queen, she thought actually the king has changed his mind and he got a lustful thought towards this slave woman. So what the queen did was, so she came to the slave's place and she asked her to go away. And she herself started to prepare the sandal powder. Now, the queen's both hands had many bracelets, not two, not one. Many bracelets were there in her left hand, in her right hand, in both hands. Now, king, when he is noting how the queen is preparing sandal powder, so it produces a lot of sound because many bracelets were touching each other, hitting each other, a lot of noise is generating. When she is using the other hand, similarly, it is making a lot of noise. So the king become so somewhat desperate about this situation, little somewhat further motivated about the situation because he understood it very well. Now, when there are many people available, so it's very difficult to practice, it becomes a real hindrance so that one loses one's seclusion. And a lot of quarrels and arguments and all these things are available when many people were there. So now what the king did was he turned the other side and started to reflect without looking queen. He started to reflect and do some meditation. So he got this sign as a good vipassana motivation, kind of insightful practice, insightful incident for him to arouse urge. And now he is thinking, so this is the way of the world, this is the way of the sansara. So when many people are there, many quarrels are there, many arguments are there. When less people are there, less arguments. When I am alone, so I can stay calm. So that is the path that he is reflecting, and that helped him to attain Paccheka Buddhahood. Now, king has now become a Paccheka Buddhahood, and later, once queen has prepared the powder and she wanted to offer it to the king, and he she come close to the queen king, and he asks, she asks him to wake up because the powder is available. Then the king refused that sandal powder and asked her to go away. Now I am not a king. So the others also have heard this conversation, and once they approach other ministers and other the people, and he mentioned that I am not a king anymore. I am a Paccheka Buddha. So this is an interesting part, an incident which actually causes this verse to utter. Now there are some similar incidents happen to other people, which actually have become certain proximate causes for them to have some insightful practice. Say for example, when Venerable Patachara, when she was as a bhikkhuni, was practicing well, and one day she is not yet enlightened, not an arahant yet, and she come closer to the hut, the kuti, where she is residing, and she wanted to wash her foot. So there was a water pot, and using which she put some water to her foot, and some water actually has absorbed to the ground, and some actually has gone little far. And she put some more, and similarly some have absorbed and some have gone little far. So likewise, this little incident has triggered some contemplation in her mind. And she was thinking that like this, some people are after the death, so they go to the hell, and some may go to the the heavenly realms. So likewise, this whole samsara is completely somewhat vulnerable. So this has become some sort of a triggering for her mind, and she became enlightened by contemplating after this triggering incident. So a very incident, very small thing, by the way, very ordinary thing. When we look at it, we don't even care about it. But for her, it has become some sort of a sign for her to reflect. Like in that story, the king has noticed how the bracelets are touching each other, hitting each other and generating little noise. So it has become some sort of an insightful practice, a triggering point for that king to reflect. And there are other incidents like another time, probably you have heard that Venerable Chullapanthaka was left out, and his brother actually chased him away, telling that he can't learn any, even a single verse for 4 months. So then Mahapanthaka, the brother, thought that this fellow is not useful for the sasana, so he asked him to go away. So little Chullapanthaka was crying on closer to the Jetavanarama, the gate, and Buddha has noticed him. So Buddha approached him, and he simply packed him his head and sort of trying to console him, and then asked, why are you crying? Then he mentioned that my brother has chased me away because I couldn't remember even a single verse. I was trying for four months now. Then Buddha actually asked, are you really want to stay as a monk, or do you really want to go back to your home? No, I want to stay. So little Chullapanthaka was actually enjoying the monkhood. Then Buddha mentioned, okay, this dispensation is mine, not Venerable Mahapanthaka, so let's go inside. So he has prepared, the Buddha has prepared a kind of a little, cloth, which is a white colored cloth, little piece of white colored cloth, and asked him to rub it. A little ordinary activity, just rub it again and again. You are rubbing using your hand. Rajoharanang, Rajoharanang. Now he is simply using a phrase And that phrase is like a mantra, like a some sort of a noting, kind of a labeling. So he is doing it again and again. So it made his mind to concentrate, because it's a very simple activity. A simple piece of cloth is there, and looking at it without looking anything else. And he is simply using a term, Rajoharanang, Rajoharanang, Rajoharanang. So very simple phrase. So this Venerable Chuldapanthaka's mind becomes so concentrated using that phrase. And once his mind is concentrated, now he understood, now because of the rubbing, this previously clean white cloth has become now dirty. It has become discolored. Now it made him some sort of a reflection that this body is impure. Because of this body's impurities, this very white color, clean cloth has become discolored. So it's a very little incident. So that also kind of a triggering point for this little Chuldapanthaka. And at that time, Buddha understood that Venerable Chuldapanthaka's mind is well concentrated, as well as his mind has now turned towards vipassana, turned towards insight, turned towards the impermanence. To understand something deeply. So at that time he preached Dhamma, and Venerable Chuldapanthaka was able to attain arahantship. Now these are very little incidents, but when we are using them properly as very, you know, kind of proper guidance, proper way, then it can lead to deep understanding. Now there is another incident, like another monk. So he is actually someone of a kind of a student of Venerable Sariputta, Venerable Mahasariputta, who's the chief disciple of the Buddha. And now Venerable Sariputta, since this monk is quite you know, kind of a youth, kind of a young adult, so he said to practice Asubha meditation. Because sometimes for during this young age, a lot of lustful thoughts are there. So Venerable Sariputta thought, so it is better to practice a lot of asubha, and in order to overcome lust. So this particular monk is practicing again and again, but there is no any kind of progress in his practice. And he is also diligently practicing, but the kammatthana was not successful. And Venerable Sariputta understood that he is not able to give him proper kammatthana, proper meditation instruction. So what he did was he carried him to the Buddha. And then he informed the Buddha that this monk is one of my students, and I have given him this Asubha Bhavana, the reflecting about the loathsomeness of the body. But this monk couldn't get much advancement, improvement in his practice using this meditation object. Could Bhante help him in for further development? Then Buddha asked Venerable Sariputta to, okay, I mean, I can do it. And then Venerable Sariputta went away, and he asked Venerable Sariputta to come in the evening to fetch this particular Venerable. And Buddha has given a different meditation object. Instead of doing Asubha Bhavana, so he has given a beautiful flower. So that's a beautiful flower. It is not something ugly, but a beautiful flower. Now this monk was so impressed by the beauty of this flower. Now he is looking at the flower, and he is reflecting the beauty. Now that has sort of blossomed his mind. His mind has become really happy by seeing the pleasantness, the purity, and the color, the beauty of this flower. And his mind was so happy. And after a while, while he is looking at, the flowers start to sort of fade away. It become discolored. And the petals become discolored, some of them started to drop, fall. So now the monk was thinking, It was so beautiful some time ago, but now it has become discolored. Now everything has changed. Now Buddha understood, now this monk's mind was so concentrated because his mind was so happy, and as a result of that, the mind has become concentrated to that particular object, to the flower, and now he has seen the impermanence of the flower. So it has become an insightful practice for him. So at that time Buddha preached Dhamma, and he too attained Arahantship. Now you can see these are very, in a way, some small activities or small signs, certain marks, which these monks are able to apply for their practice. So when one is looking at it properly, insightfully, so you can get that benefit. So it's quite interesting. And there's another story called Venerable Nagasamala. So he is actually going on arms round in a particular road. And at that time, he noticed that many people were gathered to a particular place and they are enjoying. Now, you know, while going on the road, so he's going house to house, and there's a particular place, many people were gathered, and there's a little music is there, and many people were gathered. Now he, while going closer to that place, that gathering place, he looked at it. So there he found there's a beautiful woman. She's dancing. She's dancing, and many people, other people were gathered there, and they are clapping, whistling and enjoying and all these things. Now, typically what happens is when a monk or whoever looking at this kind of a sight, so they also become elated, they also become lustful, and they also somewhat get distracted. But for Venerable Nagasamala, the complete opposite has happened. He is looking at the danger in this sight. So he is looking at and understanding, by looking at this kind of a sight, by looking at this sort of a situation, how many people are getting distracted? How many of them are generating more and more lustful thoughts? How many of them get more and more attracted towards this samsara? They become more deluded. So what a dangerous sight it is. Now this is how Venerable Nagasamala looked at this incident. Now when he is looking at like that, more and more the danger, the disadvantages, the consequences of this sort of situation was more evident to him, and he uses that as an insightful practice, and he too became an Arahant. Now you can see, if one can look at different incidents, sometimes from the outside look, we can't say whether it is some sort of a really insightful incident or really insightful sign, or it is a kind of a detrimental sight. But if the person has the insightful practice, or he has the proper vision, samadhi, or in a way yoniso manasikara, looking at it in a proper manner, proper direction, then he can turn that particular sight, sound, whatever it is, to his benefit. Venerable Nagasamala did that. This particular Pacheka Buddha did that. The king actually did that. So the two bracelets touching each other, making little sound. So it has become a kind of a nimitta, kind of a sign for this king to reflect about the value of seclusion, the value of the secluded practice. To another person, to the kind of a flower, at the beauty of the flower, make him happy, and so the mind get concentrated. And after that, when it is fading away, so his mind becomes somewhat insightful about the impermanence. So likewise, certain times, so how we are looking at a particular incident, how we are looking at a flower, how we are looking at some kind of a situation, actually may help sometimes in our practice. So sometimes we think that we always have to sit cross-legged and practice diligently and why we have to do walking meditation. This is the only method, only place that we develop insight. So that is not the proper way. Actually, if we are using, say, Yoniso Manasikara, the wise reflection, so any incident probably can be a kind of a very interesting, insightful practice. And we never know how, so what would be these kinds of insights. And you may be going through the market, you may be going by traveling by the bus, you may be driving your own vehicle, you may be wearing your clothes, whatever the different activities that you do. Probably you may be doing your daily course, so different things maybe. But when you are looking at it in a different angle, probably it can generate kind of insightful practice. So this is what has happened to in this particular story. So it is in a way kind of a skill that we have to develop, how to use these various maybe natural incidents or the kind of incident happens in the environment, how to use that properly in a beneficial manner for our practice. So with that note, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Oh, sorry, Bhante. Currently there are 5 questions. Question number 1. Mindful walking. Dear Venerable Sir, I've been practicing for some time under your guidance and thank you very much for this invaluable program. I'm grateful for your service, which led to for me to develop a regular mindfulness. To develop a regular mindfulness practice. This is regarding being mindful while fast walking for exercise. Due to the lockdown situations, we only get about 1 to 2 hours per day to go out and exercise, and I want to make it a reasonable physical activity. This means I have to do very fast walking around the playground or jog slowly. While doing this, I tried to apply the mindfulness technique I used during the walking practice. It is possible to focus on the sole of the foot and keep the attention on the observations. But after some time, when the walking becomes faster and prolonged, I feel it becomes too complicated. Since there are other people around and we have to keep social distancing, I don't want to go to the effortless detached walking as well. Left and right noting technique is a bit of a burden and stress as well, which I have tried several times. Focusing on breath and nostrils does not work, since after some time the breath, out-breath happens from the mouth, especially when jogging. I then recalled one of the techniques Bhante used in some guided meditation. While breathing in, feel the energizing effect, and while breathing out, feel or observe the calming down effect. I tested this and seems it's working quite well in high cardio exercise, even after running 5 to 6 kilometers. After a while, it becomes effortless to be mindful on the energizing effect on the whole body when breathing in and mindfully aware of the calming down of the whole body while breathing out. I don't know if this practice is correct or where it belongs in mindfulness practice or samatha, but it works. Normally, I get tired about after 5 to 6 rounds around the 400-meter playground, but now I can do 10 or 15 and then still feel energized and pumped up. Thought of checking with Bhante and sharing this reflection with Metta. That's the end of the question.
I think, if you feel that it is working for you, no harm in using it, because you are doing some sort of mindfully breathing in. You are at the beginning, you are emphasizing and you get energized, and you get more emphasis on mindful breathing out on the other time, and you get relaxed. No harm. Actually, different incidents can be used for our practice, as we even discussed today. So it is our duty, in a way, our skill, how to use these various techniques for the benefit of our practice. So the breath is one incident or one phenomenon. Rising and falling is another phenomenon. Walking is another phenomenon. And maybe you are doing jogging. Maybe while doing that, how to be mindful about the various activities that you feel. Or probably you may be doing some yoga exercises. how are you going to use that to do the development of the mindfulness? Or you may be doing various other daily activities. How are you going to use them for the benefit of your mindfulness practice? So likewise, so we have to find out our own ways and means how to make use of these different say activities for the benefit of our practice. So it seems like the way that you have used seems to be a beneficial one, a correct one. So no harm in continuing that. Yes.
Question number 2 of 6. This is mindful sitting. Dear Venerable Sir, during question and answer session and guided sitting, you mentioned about gently observing or be gentle on your focus and attention while practicing. I can understand fully focused, determined attention to observe the breath, keeping the mind at the nostrils. I tried to bring it back immediately when the focus is lost. Can you explain how do we do this in a gentle manner? Thank you and much merits. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, gentle manner in the sense, sometimes we become too much enthusiastic. So in such situation, we are putting too much effort. Say, probably it can lead to crunching of teeth and you making more effort and you say you get wrinkles on your eyebrows and probably wrinkles on your forehead. And certain parts of your body become tightened. So that indicates you are not balancing your effort. So the balancing of effort is one of the important aspects of meditation, where at the beginning you probably need a little effort, but later as your mind become more tamed, more concentrated, more calm, so then we have to reduce the effort. So otherwise, mind can't develop further. So the too much or excessive effort can become a hindrance. And Buddha mentioned, or the Dhamma, it is mentioned, atipangahitam viriyam uddacchanu patitam samadhissa paripanto. So what that statement says is if you are putting too much effort, that itself become a cause for restlessness to arise. So we need to therefore manage effort. So when at the beginning, probably it is true that we need some amount of effort because mind is somewhat vulnerable, somewhat restless. So we need some purposeful attention. But later, so now mind has calmed down because we have repeatedly did the same activity, applied the mind again and again to the same object, for example. Then as a result of that exercise, now mind has become fairly focused. So at that time, now you don't need to put too much effort. If you are putting still the same amount of effort, so that actually prevents you from further comprehending the object. So when you are going to the comprehension of the object, there you need to understand, okay, the mindfulness has now established. Now I have to look at this particular object carefully. And for that, I have to maintain the necessary amount of effort, not excessive amount of effort, but only the necessary amount of effort. So that is why I am emphasizing here. So we need to recognize how much effort is needed in the sense, I mean, at the beginning, you have some amount of effort. As you are going towards another 15, 20 minutes, you have another level of effort. And once the mind is fairly calmed down, you have to have another level of effort. So likewise, you have to do this kind of balancing of effort. So this is in a way kind of an art that we have to learn practically. I can simply tell you, but you yourself have to learn how to use this balancing of effort. So when you do this proper balancing of effort, then only your mind become more calm, relaxed, and still more focused on that object, and the kind of equilibrium, kind of an equipoise has happened in the mind. So this is something very practical and again kind of an interesting task. We have to learn what is really, how I am going to put effort, and if am I using excessive effort? Am I using only the right amount of effort? and when I have to use right amount of effort. I have to do the balancing. So these are the points that we are learning. We have to practically learn through our practice. Yeah.
Question number 3 of 6. Actually, this one is in Sinhalese, and the Sinhalese is not very good. Is it okay if I present my screen to you, Bhante?
Yeah, fine.
Give me 1 second. Can you see?
Okay, so you want me to read it?
Yes, please.
Okay, then let me try. පූජනීය ස්වාමීන් වහන්සේගෙන් අවසරයි. දිනපතා පරයන්ක සහ සතිමත් වීම සම්බන්ධ වේ. සවස පරයන්කෙන් පසු විවේක කාලය තුල තේකොළ ගැනීමට කඩේට යාමට විය. සතිමත්ව එය ගොස් හිතුවට වඩා කලින් ගෙදර ආවේ. මෙය මීට පෙරත් සිදු වී ඇත. කයෙහි විශේෂ දෝෂයක් නැත. එනමුත් කය වෙවුලන ස්වභාවයක් මට කාර්යයට ගොස් වැඩිපුර ජනයා කලබල කතා තියෙන තැන්වලට ගියහම මම ගෙදර හෝ අඩුම තරමේ කාර් එකට යනකම් ඉන්නේ. මේ ඉඳලා ගෙදර ගියහම පැයක් යනකම් පරිසරය වෙවුලන ගතියක් ආවා. බොහෝ විට ගේ ඇතුළට වෙලා තනියෙ ඉන්න කැමති මම තනියම ජීවත් වෙනවා. වත්පන් තත්ත්වය එනම් කතාබහ අඩු ඈතින් යාම හොඳයි. නමුත් නැවතත් රට ඇරි දවසට ජනයා අතරට යාමට සිදු වේ. මා අසෑයතේ භවනාවට අනුග්‍රහ කළ යුතු බවයි. මේ මෙවන් අවස්ථාවක සකසා ගත යුතුද ලෙස ඉතා කරුණාවෙන් ස්වාමින්වහන්සේකින් පතමි. Okay, I think හරි දැන් මම සිංහලෙන් කියනවා නම් ඒ කියන්නේ දැන් අපි මෙතෙන්දී දෙපැත්තම බලන්න වෙනවා. ඒ කියන්නේ අපි නිතරම තනියමම ඉන්නවා කියන එක නෙමෙයි මෙතින් අදහස් වෙන්නේ. දැන් සමහර ලාවට අපි මේ කතා කරන කග්ග විසාන සූත්‍රය දිහා කෙනෙක් එක දෘෂ්ටි කෝණයකින් බලනකොට කෙනෙක් හිතන්න පුළුවන් මේ තනිකරම තනියෙන් ඉඳලා කරන ප්‍රැක්ටිස් එකක් තනියෙන් ඉඳලා කරන වැඩක් ගැනමයි නිතරම කියන්නේ කියලා. ඒකේ දෙපැත්තක් තියෙනවා. දැන් අපි ටික ටික භවනා කරගෙන ඉදිරියට යනකොට මේ තනියෙන් ඉඳීමත් කරන්න ඕනේ, පිරිසක් එක්ක ඉන්න එකත් කරන්න. ඇතරම තනියෙන් ඉඳගෙන අපි හිතේ ඒකාග්‍රතාවය, සතිමත් භාවය, දෙය දිහා සියුම්ම බලන හැකියාව ඒවා වර්ධනය කරනවා. ඊට පස්සේ අපි තවත් පිරිසක් අතරට ගියාට පස්සේ අපේ හිත කොහොමද දැන් හැසිරෙන්නේ? හිතේ තියෙනවද කලබල වෙන්නේ නැති ගතියක්? සාමාන්‍යයෙන් නම් හිත කලබල වෙනවා. පිරිසක් එක්ක ඉන්නකොට අපි ඒගොල්ලෝගේ හැසිරීම නිසා හිත කලබල වෙනවා. ඒගොල්ලන්ගේ ක්‍රියාකාරකම් නිසා හිත කලබල වෙනවා. ඒගොල්ලෝ ආවේගශීලී වෙනකොට ඔන්න අපිත් ආවේගශීලී වෙනවා. ඉතින් එතකොට බැලුවාම නිකන් ඒගොල්ලන්ට පුළුවන් අපිව නිකන් නටවන්න. නමුත් ඒ ස්වභාවය දැන් පොඩ පොඩ අඩු වෙනවා නම් අන්න හරි. ඉතින් ඒක බලන්න නම් අපි අනිවාර්යෙන්ම මේ පිරිස ගාවට යන්නත් ඕනේ. පිරිසක් අතරට යන්නත් ඕනේ. ඒ වගේම මේ පිරිසක් එක්ක කටයුතු කරද්දී තමයි අපේ තියෙන දුර්වලතා, අපේ මනස කොහොමද ක්‍රියාත්මක වෙන්නේ, අපේ තව මොනවාද කෙලෙස් වැඩ කරන්නේ. කෙනෙක් එක්ක මම කතා කරද්දී ආව මම යටපත් කරන්න හදනවද, නැත්නම් මම ඉස්පතු වෙන්න හදනවද, නැත්නම් මගේ හිතේ ද්වේෂයක් පහළ වෙනවද, රාගයක් පහළ වෙනවද කියලා අන්න ඒ විවිධ අන්දමින් අපි අනිත්‍යයත් එක්ක කටයුතු කරනකොට අපිට අපේම ස්වභාවය හඳුනා ගන්න පුළුවන්. ඒ නිසා මුලදී තියෙනවා එක අන්දමින් අපි තනියම කටයුතු කරන ගතියක්. හැබැයි අනිවාර්යෙන්ම අපි පිරිසක් එක්කත් කොහොමද කටයුතු කරන්නේ, පිරිසක් එක්ක ඉන්නකොට කොහොමද මේ හිත හැසිරෙන්නේ කියන එක අපි අනිවාර්යයෙන්ම සොයා බැලිය යුතුයි. ඒ නිසා මෙතන පොඩ්ඩක් අන්තගාමී වීමක් තියෙනවා මේ ප්‍රශ්නය තුළ. ඒ කියන්නේ තනියෙ මිදීමම අත්‍යවශ්‍යයි කියන වගේ හැඟීමක් මේ ප්‍රකාශය තුළ තියෙනවා. නමුත් ඒක නෙමෙයි වෙන්න තියෙන්නේ. අපිට පුළුවන් වෙන්න ඕනේ හුදෙකලාව ඉන්නත් පිරිසක් එක්ක ඉන්නත්. හොඳයි.
Question number 4 of 6. This is mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, my sitting and walking practice seems going well, and I've written reflections several times and received excellent guidance. As Bhante highlights, sitting has become really comfortable, and I tend to feel and absorb the comfort of half lotus posture, which I have trained over a time period. Even when the body pains arise after 45 minutes, I observe patches of comfortableness in the midst of the pain. I can endure pain since I know it will turn to this pleasurable, comfortable feeling at some point. Now I realize that I don't have this viewpoint for pleasurable feelings to be composed, since it can turn into a painful feeling. Always I tend to embrace or hug the pleasurable feelings which arise in the body when sitting. This happens especially after the breath fades away and when I'm observing different elemental characteristics appearing within the awareness of the body. Do I have to do something specific about my liking of the pleasurable sensations arising in the body? I feel like I don't have that distance between pleasure and the observation, unlike pain, which I can observe as a third person. Thank you for your guidance. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I think this distance, this objective looking at objective way of looking at them may happen. So as you have correctly mentioned, towards the pleasurable feelings, we have some attraction and we want to keep them. We want to have them and we want to own them. And so that is the attitude we have. On the other hand, towards the painful feeling, we want to get rid of them. We want to reduce them. So that is the attitude we all have. So, but during the Vipassana practice, so we admit that we have this kind of tendency. But anyway, I am trying to observe them. I am trying to be mindful about these various feelings. And as you have mentioned, so these feelings are not permanent. So the pleasurable feelings, after some time, can change into painful feeling. Painful feeling also may disappear and then again maybe a neutral feeling or a pleasurable feeling might arise. So likewise, these things are not certain permanent phenomena. They are quite vulnerable and we have no control at all about them. And if we think that I have to have this pleasurable feeling, I want to own this pleasurable feeling. So likewise, when we are attracted to them, ultimately, we get disappointed because we want to keep them, we want to have them, but they disappear. And if they belong to me, I should be able to maintain them. I should be able to have them as long as I want. But now there is no capacity. Even though I want to have them for a long time, they simply disappear by themselves. So this is the point that we need to recognize. So therefore, those are not self. Therefore, they are not under the governability of ourselves. So they have their own agenda. They have their own causes and conditions due to which that they arise. And those causes and conditions are also not permanent. And we have no control over them. So when those causes and conditions change, the resultant either painful or pleasurable feelings also going to change. So likewise, more and more we look at them, this whole situation, this whole phenomena, then it is causing a lot of insights. So we don't need to sort of forcefully arouse insights. Rather, when we are mindfully watching how these various different kinds of feelings are behaving, so that helps to generate these insights. So it may be we can understand how impermanent they are, how vulnerable they are, and if we attach to them, how it is causing us a lot of suffering because we want to have pleasure from these pleasurable feelings, but unfortunately, once they change, once they disappear, that we get disappointed. So if we attach to them, what kind of a suffering that we may go through, and since they behave the way they want, and they don't obey our desires, so how impersonal or a non-self they are. So these three characteristics become more and more evident to a person. So therefore, you don't need to worry about the present situation. You can simply continue your practice as you are continuing, as you are progressing. So these other, say, pleasurable feelings also start to fade away, and you may even use the interest currently you have towards them, and you may be able to watch them distantly. Yeah.
Question number 5 of 6. This is a general question. Dear Venerable Bhante, how does the Lord Buddha's teaching of Dittave Ditta Mattang, Suttave Sutta Mattang, etc., to Bahira Dharachya, where he explained the reality of what we deal with or the truth around us when we practice Vipassana. Can we use this as Dhamma knowledge, Chintamaya Nyanaya during the Vipassana practice? Many merits, Theravan Saranai. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually it is not a Chintame Jnana. It is actually something that we have to practically experience. So you may get that level. So at the beginning, actually, you may not have that skill. Ditte ditta mattam bhavissati. When seeing, so are we able to keep our mind only to the level of seeing, not generating thoughts around it, not generating any kind of ideas around it, not going to any mental proliferation because of that sight? Are we able to keep our mind quiet? Assume that you had kind of a peaceful mind, unagitated mind, very calm mind, unassociated mind, non-grasping mind. And now assume that you watched something, you saw something. So because of this sight, are you really getting disturbed? Are you making a lot of thoughts around this sight? So then still you haven't come to the level of Bahya Dharuchiri. But there are situations, there are yogis, so they still see various sights, but mind is not making stories out of them. Mind doesn't make any comments out of that sights. So mind is able to maintain its integrity. Mind is able to maintain its calmness. Mind is not now interested about these sights. Say, for example, you are doing walking practice. And during the walking path, while you are walking, your eyes are open. So even though your eyes are open and you can see various sights, still mind remain sort of constant. Mind remain unagitated and not involved in that sight. So mind has its independence. Mind has its kind of stability. Similarly, while walking, assume that there are various sounds and still mind is not much disturbed, and sound is just sound, and you have your silence, inner silence. Your mind is not talking, your mind is not chattering. Similarly, your legs are touching the ground. Now you are not focusing your attention to that touching sensation either. So those touching sensations are not making your mind agitated or making your mind distracted, but you can feel them. For feeling is just feeling. So the touching sensation is merely touching sensation. Ditte ditta mattam bhavissati, sute suta mattam bhavissati, mute muta mattam bhavissati. And similarly, there may be thoughts sometimes popping up in the mind. And you simply discard them. They don't develop to the level of rumination, develop to the level of proliferation. So they simply go away. And your mind maintain its calmness, its inner silence. So this is something that as you continue your vipassana, that you may arrive. So therefore, what is mentioned in the Bahya Dharuchiri Sutta is not simply a theoretical stuff. So that is something vipassana yogis may experience as they progress. Yeah.
Question number six. This might be the last one. General question. Dear Bhante, thank you for your guidance on meditation and Dhamma talks. In recent times, people have different views about the pandemic and how to protect oneself. They may recommend natural methods and not support modern ones like vaccination. I wondered, if there is a member of the Sangha who says they are not confident about vaccination, what is the best way to respectfully correct them? I am aware they are respected religious persons with a different approach to curing disease, but concerned about the inaccurate public health messages being sent to their followers. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Actually, a difficult question to answer. I like to get the Buddha's approach. Yeah, Buddha has recommended certain medicine. So if you refer Vinaya Pitaka, so there is a separate section called Besajja Khandaka, so which has a complete information how many medicine was prescribed to various monks, to various diseases. So a lot of medicines are there. So it's a complete volume of Khandaka. It's had a lot of information about various medicines that various monks have used, and Buddha approved them, Buddha recommend them, and Buddha himself has get the service of Jivaka for his illnesses, and Buddha himself had various other illnesses, and many other monks also had many other illnesses, and they got the service of the Jivaka and other people. So likewise, these diseases are unavoidable. So we should not have to have kind of a high-minded idea that I may not get these diseases, so I am completely free from all diseases and I am a superman or something like that. So we don't need to get that kind of a high-minded ideal, because Buddha himself has approved a lot of medicine, and Buddha himself has permitted to get medicine, and Buddha has prescribed medicine, and when monks are taking certain medicine, Buddha has approved them. And as I mentioned, you can refer Vinaya Pitaka Besajjakhandaka. So it has a lot of information about various types of medicine. So therefore, I mean, if a doctor is prescribing, okay, I have gone through all these different statistics, gone through all these experiments, so I can recommend this particular medicine for you, then we should be able to admit it. And because this is not the area that maybe you are capable, or this is not I am capable, but someone else is now capable. So when Jivaka is going to prepare some sort of a medicine for the Buddha, when Buddha was hurt by that stone put by Venerable Devadatta, so Buddha didn't deny it. So Buddha allowed it. So Buddha allowed Jivaka to put that medicine. So this is the Buddha. But probably Buddha might tell him, okay, you don't have to use this medicine. I am the Buddha. I can simply cure this disease. I don't need a physician. So Buddha could tell like that. But he didn't do that. So he behaved like a normal human being. So that is where we are grounding ourselves. So Buddha has given that example. So Buddha didn't want to show that he's a superman or he's a kind of an exceptional character who doesn't need any medicine or something like that. So he admitted the medicine. So he got medicine from Jivaka. So similarly, there are many medicine approved by the Buddha. Now say, for example, when Buddha put the precept that monks should not eat afternoon. So many monks started to become sick. So they get, in today's terms, this gastritis and all this, the diseases. Then Buddha has given medicine. Sappi navanitam telang madhupanitam. Sappi is the ghee. Navanita is the butter in today's terms. Telang is the, you know, the gingery oil. Madhu is the honey, bee honey. Panitam means the sugar. So this has become some sort of a medicine for the monks, and he even permitted it to keep it for 7 days and consume. You don't need to re-offer it again and again. Typically, any medicine, any other food, you have to offer on that day in the morning. But here, Buddha has given a special permission. You don't need to re-offer. You can keep it for 7 days consecutively and consume, because you can overcome the diseases. Similarly, there are many medicine Buddha has permitted, and he understood, and he has looked at it in a more, human manner. Yeah, these bodies are prone to various diseases, including his body. So therefore, he admitted accepting various medicine. So therefore, I have that kind of an attitude. So if the government and the doctors, physicians are prescribing some good medicine, so why not use it then? Yeah.
That ends the questions for today, Bhante. So I'll just check if there's any more. No. There's also been quite less participants, but I think most of them are actually participating in the retreat at the moment. So thank you for all those who actually made time to come today. I'd like to end the session. I'd like to first thank Bhante for giving up valuable time for this program especially with there's lots of programs happening in this Saranavanya, and also pass on our merits. And also for the people seen and unseen participating and also helping out with the program. And lastly, to all the participants, because without you, there would be no program. So with that, I'd like to end the program. Therwan Sarnai.
Yeah, Therwan Sarnai.